This is a Rant Entertainment Media special presentation.
Legacy is one of the biggest.
I was watching WCW for Sting in 1989. It was the reason I had a blonde-haired flat top.
He was the big superstar. He had the Dayglow face paint. He's yelling. He was definitely the most popular superstar at WCW.
He had just caught on. The paint, the charisma.
Sting was my favorite wrestler for a long time.
Literally the coolest thing ever. Like, I had Sting t-shirts.
The crowning jewel for WCW!
Certain people come along at different eras and times, you know, that has it. And he was one of them.
This is where the big boys play, huh?
What?
And now all of a sudden, he's this Avenger.
A guy like Sting was like your last hope. Okay, man, you're all we got left.
When you thought about the WCW, you thought about Sting first.
Hugely important to their success.
No man in sports makes an entrance like this man.
He had to evolve that way to save WCW. He had to be bad to be good.
Save that hero through that whole period, which was really hard to do.
I think he would have succeeded anywhere at any point in time.
Oh, my God! The man who's never stepped foot inside WWE's arena before!
Thank you to all the little fingers out there.
Oh my goodness. Hold on, we're going to let that play out, that music play out. Hold on. He does that. Welcome, everybody. We are live on the air. It is Saturday afternoon here on Rant EM Radio. Saturday evening, however you want to look at it. 5 o'clock on the East Coast, 2 p.m. For you people out there in California, Vegas, Washington, you know, all those funny places like that. It's still Saturday if you're listening to us in the UK. I believe it's around 10 o'clock at night, something like that. But welcome, everybody. We are in the thick of things here on the WrestleMania Marathon here on Rant EM Radio. This is program number six of 14. I believe, if my math is right, number six of 14. So we still got a ways to go before this marathon is in the books. We got a lot of stuff going on tonight. Of course, a full day of programming tomorrow. So I hope you're enjoying every single minute of it. But right now, welcome to. It's been a while since we've done one of these. It's a Rant EM Roundtable. We are going to talk about something that is. Been on my mind for quite some time now, a subject that I've wanted to address and that is the legacy of the icon, the legacy of the franchise, the legacy of Sting. I'm Double A, being joined by Lee Champion.
What's up, what's up?
I believe over on the other side of the room, we've got the Impact player, Mr. Phil Rea.
Howdy, howdy, howdy.
And we'll be joined a little bit later on by Tony C., who the term he used was, I'm grieving right now, give me 5 minutes. So we'll hear from Tony C. a little bit later on as he joins us, and he'll talk about Sting. But let me tell you, tonight, live on the WWE Network from Dallas, Texas, Sting will take his rightful place in the WWE Hall of Fame. Of course, you know, everybody can, you know, everybody shits on the Hall of Fame, says it doesn't mean anything. You know what? I don't give a damn if they put in Snoop Dogg, Regis, William Shatner, you know, all these people. I don't give a damn who they put in. As long as they put the important people, that's where they belong. They belong there, the important people. And Sting, by God, is an important person. You know, I myself, you know, even though he's not wrestling anymore, he's not an active wrestler anymore, I'm still a Sting fan. Lee, you're a little bit older than me, not by much, but you're a little bit older than me, so that means you've been watching wrestling a little bit longer than I have, but you're a Sting fan. And Phil, I know you are also a Sting fan, having watched Sting blossom, you know, when he came up in the business.
I can tell you that there wasn't much to look at when you first saw him. And when he was doing the whole, you know, family thing with Hot Stuff at Gilbert and the UWF, mm-hmm. I didn't get that stuff till months and months later. But he wasn't really much to look at. I mean, you could tell he had charisma. You could tell he had something. But it wasn't until he got to the NWA is where he, you know, the face paint got a little better. The hair got a little lighter. He actually toned himself out a little better. And, you know, he was very stiff in the ring when he started out. He wasn't very good. He started way too early. You know, they threw him out there to the Lions. Like, he didn't get much training, as you saw the documentary with him, Warrior, you know.
Well, he learned pretty much on the fly.
On the fly, yeah. And that's how most guys did it back then, if you could believe that. There wasn't like a school you could go to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the Ultimate Warrior, the Road Warriors, all these people, they learned on the fly. Nikita Koloff, I believe, was another one that learned on the fly.
Yep.
And it's just... But the difference between Sting and the rest of the others... And it's not that the only one, I guess, I would have to say really didn't take to the in-ring, you know, skills was the Ultimate Warrior. The other ones were unique and this and that. You know, it's not, and I'm not disparaging the Road Warriors. I love the Road Warriors, and I'm not being negative on Nikita. Nikita was a big draw in the mid '80s. He was a big deal, and of course, he's also a big part of Sting's career. But none of them took to the business like Sting. None of them.
He owes his career to Jerry Jarrett, man. Because, I mean, if Jerry Jarrett didn't throw him, like I mentioned just a couple seconds ago, to the Wolves, I think, in Memphis, I think that would have been, you know, him having to learn, and like you said, on the fly, I think is what brought out what became, you know, I hate using that word icon because... Well, I mean, I can, I guess.
I don't mind using the word icon when it's for the right people.
Yeah. I think that there's a mystique to him. When you, as a kid, as a teenager, and I know you and Lee can attest to this too, like, he had every component. He was a perfect package. You know, he can wrestle, he cut a really good promo, and you know, he came at the right time. You know, the business was booming. Other territories were looking for their own Hulk Hogan.
Right.
You know? So he was the guy, you know?
Lee?
You know, looking back, Sting was my guy. I mean, you've heard me talking more recent times about people like AJ Styles, Jay Lethal, et cetera, but anybody who knows me, Mofo grew up with me, and he would be the first person to tell Sting, you know, that was always, he was the one that stood out the most to me, the one that I look, growing up in the hood, and here's a guy who's the complete opposite. His character is the complete opposite of you know, I mean, where I grew up and what I was used to seeing. And it didn't matter. He was the one that I connected with. You know, I mean, it was like, I didn't know anything about surfing, you know, the blonde hair. We knew that one was real hair color. You know, I mean, it was just, but it was him, the face paint. You wanted to be Sting. And when I went down to the arena, I didn't care. I mean, don't get me wrong. Who didn't want to see the Horsemen? Who didn't want to see, you know, all the other people, Midnight Express, everybody? We wanted to see those guys. I'd be lying if I didn't want to see them, but Sting had to be there. Right. You know,
something wasn't right if he wasn't there.
Something wasn't right if he wasn't there. Like Bash 91, for example. I mean, of course, it was like, okay, Flair's not here. It's a big deal. I mean, we want to see Ric Flair. But if Sting wasn't there, it just wouldn't have been good for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was WCW. You know, I started watching before, you know, 91, obviously. But when you talk about WCW, not Jim Crockett Promotions, not, you know, because by the time 91 came around, the Horsemen weren't, the, you know, Dusty wasn't. I mean, that all that stuff was, a lot of people, I think, like to group all that together. Mm-hmm. But there's a difference. There was a difference in, you know, watching the old Jim Crockett Promotions with Tully on, you know. By the time 91 came, the Horsemen weren't.
It was a different promotion.
It was a different promotion.
And I'm going to tell you, I can even tell you the date, more or less, the earmark of when everything changed. And that was the first Super Brawl. I think that's when everything changed. Like, it was like we left behind the NWA. We left everything behind that was what brought us to what became WCW. Because after the first Super Brawl, what happened? Flair left. Luger became champion. I believe the Steiners were put on the back. But there was a lot of things that happened after the first Super Brawl.
It was a lot of... And the thing was is that, like... You're absolutely right, and I remember that. I remember that Sunday watching that Super Brawl, and it was different. It was just completely different. He was WCW. Mm-hmm. He was the guy who never left. He never left. You know, he was at a promotion from start to finish. He mm-hmm. never left WCW.
14 years.
The only one, you know, that's a wrestler, because I mean, obviously there was people there from beginning to end. But he's the only wrestler, and there was never a doubt, ever.
Nope.
You know, in the years of when the internet started, the, you know, 96, 97, and you heard of people, you know, jumping ship from one promotion to the next. To the best of my knowledge, I don't ever recall reading a single story where there was even speculation that Sting might leave WCW. Ever. I heard Shawn Michaels was going to leave the WWF, and of course we heard Brett was leaving, and Brett eventually did leave, but things like that. But Sting never came up at all.
And he was my Hogan. Like, I mean, don't get me wrong, he wasn't on that popularity level, but to me, it didn't matter. Like, and also, here's a guy who stood out from when he's, at least from what I can recollect looking back, and even look back now, I mean, it was a really southern, really heavily southern-based company.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was.
And his gimmick was like, it wasn't
California.
That.
It was California.
Yeah. And he made it thrive. You know, he stood out. And it was like, seeing him come out screaming, beating his chest, you know, it was like, you know, it was a Nature Boy versus the Beastie Boy, and then he would, you know, press Flair, and it was just the best. And it wasn't just that, it was his feuds that he had.
Mm-hmm. Let's piggyback that 3 years prior to the merge, which was 91, right? You got 88, it was Great American Bash. Sting is now in the company for about, what, a year maybe?
He came in...
87?
The thing right. is, and let me preface this by saying that WWE, I believe in the last 2 weeks, put on the network the Sting biography in full.
Yeah.
They put it on.
Oh, it's up there?
It's up
yeah.
there.
Yeah, well, if you don't have it, really, go either go check it out on the network or go. I have it on DVD downstairs. It's amazing.
And the documentary, for the most part, is...
I was waiting for it to put it up. I didn't know it was up.
It went up about 2 weeks ago, and I just saw it last... I saw it last Saturday, and then I rewatched it again today to try to make sure I didn't miss anything and to also look back on some of the things. And, you know they did a good job focusing in on some of the higher points. And really, the document, this is one of the first documentaries that I could recall, or ever, WWE primarily just focused on, like, the documentary is, for the most part, is like 90%, 85% of Sting talking. It's not, this is not, you know, we go back to Ric Flair, we go back, there's a lot of that, yeah, but it's Sting, 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 from start to finish. And so he goes over his time in Memphis, and of course the UWF, and then he came into Jim Crockett at the end of 87. They actually showed Sting's first interview on World Championship Wrestling, and then of course March of 88 was the first clash. So we're talking maybe even less than a year.
Yeah,
that all that started, and then,
well, the UWF was getting bought out by the Crockett.
That was in 87.
87. So,
and then, you know, Crockett sold to Ted Turner in the middle of 88. I want to say,
yeah,
somewhere
but
in
they
that
didn't
neighborhood.
Switch over to 91, right? WCW.
It was WCW from about late 89, but the official, like, they
the break off
the
NWA
break
was
off from. It was It was around 91 was the official breakoff, and then they were still affiliated with the NWA. They just were not doing business, regular business with the NWA, and then they officially severed ties in 93. That was the end of it. But yeah, I mean, Sting, from he walked in the door to the time he became world champion was a very short period of time.
87 and 88, he had the 45-minute time limit draw with Flair
with
and
Flair,
Clash Champions.
Right.
But I could sit here and tell you guys and everybody now that his first title win at the Great American Bash, to this day, I get emotional when I see it.
You know what, Phil? Let's take you back. I have some audio. Here's and the only reason why I'm playing, I have certain clips of Sting, you know, not too much. And the reason why I cherry picked these specific clips, it's because I feel that these were special moments that, you know, I feel stand out in his career. It's only five or six clips that I pulled, but I pulled two from the Great American Bash. There's something about what you're about to hear. This is just his introduction that night that even, you know, we're talking, this is 26 years ago. It just feels magical.
Dressed in red, white, and blue here at the Great American Bash, his first one-on-one match in early February of this year. He says, Bob, he's at 100%. He says there will be no excuses. He's here to compete man on man. Let's hope it stays that way.
Well, this is what he's had in mind, and he's thought of nothing but this moment now, and it's finally arrived. Let's see if he's up to the task.
I mean, that right there, awesome.
And I could
go back and watch that, by the way, 100 times.
I watch it every, like, 3 months.
Yeah.
Because I had the network.
Yeah.
But you, I don't know. I tell the fans of our shows all the time that there's nothing like that. The build to those, to that story particularly, you know, it was like passing the torch. I think Flair knew that he was finally getting some competition.
Well, let's take you back in time. Let's go back to February at the Clash of the Champions when Sting got hurt. And I've said many times, my earliest wrestling memory was that night in Corpus Christi when Sting got hurt. He was climbing the cage, and he jumped. The story goes is that he jumped from the cage, and when he jumped, that's when he severed his patella tendon.
Oh, you mean with the cage match?
With the cage match between the Horseman and
J-Tex and the Horseman.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And that, you know, it was supposed to set it, because that night, earlier in the night, Sting got kicked out of the Horseman by Ole Anderson.
Ole threatened for him. He had to give up his title shot that he had.
Right, and that was coming up.
I'm watching a time.
I
tried to tell you.
Flair threw a fit because Sting wouldn't cave.
Flair stopped the taste out of his mouth.
Right, and they said, I'm giving you 2 hours to make up your mind at the end of the, you know, and all that stuff. End of the night comes, and he was supposed to go into Wrestle War and face Flair, but of course that didn't happen, and Lex Luger came in and filled the void during Sting's absence. He wrestled Flair at Wrestle War. Capital Combat came along. He wrestled Flair at Capital Combat, and of course the infamous RoboCop thing with Sting. But all these things happened, and I just heard, probably I'd say about 3 weeks ago, and I did not know this. Flair had Sting on his podcast back in November.
Yeah.
So I heard it, and when Sting got hurt, Flair went to Sting and said, don't worry, when you come back, I'm going to have this title for you. And that's what happened.
It's good business.
Flair knew. Then we go into
as much flack as I give Flair for certain things.
He's smart.
Yeah, I mean, Sting, it seemed like Sting was some... Sting and Steamboat were two people that seemed like he, you know, really wanted to work with.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they were good workers, you know?
And good guys on top of that.
But, I mean, the reason why I said that, Phil, was because, like, I've known Flair to, depending on where he's working at and whatever particular, but he'll say what has to be said for what company he's working for. You know, and I've never heard him slight any of those two individuals. Like, you know, for example, if he's working for TNA, he'll say something. You know, sometimes people can just...
Right.
You know, like, for example, Sting never took a shot at WWE when he
never.
Was TNA.
And then, it's all politics, Lee. I mean, and at the end of the day, I think, you know, you know how you get that politician who wants to get those last set of votes in, like that town assemblyman or a congressman-type guy in your neighborhood, and he's going door-to-door getting those signatures? You have to play the politics, too. So no matter where you go, there's going to be backstage, you know, locker room nonsense, politics. I think those were two guys, Steamboat and Flair. I mean, Steamboat and Sting, that were just genuinely good guys. Didn't play the politics, so they didn't play the game. It was just easy for you to transition if you're involved in these guys. It's almost like a ballet or a dance. It's like you got to work with these people for God knows how many weeks on the road. Mm-hmm. It's like, I mean, I got Flair's book in my closet. He dedicates entire chapters to Sting and Steamboat.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could tell that there was a camaraderie, and then there was a good work relationship. And you know what, wrestling, if you're boys with the guy you're working with, it makes everything better for you, the fan, and the audience, and the performance.
And you know what? It should not come as a surprise why Ric Flair is the one inducting him tonight, and not Lex Luger.
Oh, I got
it. Oh, totally, it should be Ric. I mean, totally. I wouldn't. It's close. Even though they're close friends and everything, it's got to be Ric Flair.
Has to be. I was watching the thing tonight and earlier today, I should say, and I was with a couple of kids that you know, they don't know anything about wrestling, but they were watching with me, and they were questioning certain things, and I said. Because Flair had said something in that documentary about something about Sting, and I had to explain it. And I said, "You got to understand, these two, this is pretty much they're each other's greatest rivalry for the most part." So
at the end of the day, it's all about money.
Yeah,
because you know, back then there was no internet, like Lee said. There was none of that. In some places like me, I didn't have this on cable yet. I had to watch it on UHF channels or tape trade.
Right.
At the end of the day, it was money. And you were only as good as your draw.
Exactly.
You know, if you're putting asses in the seats, then it's a wrap. And Lee had his little, you know, Madison Square Garden down there in Baltimore, same way I had mine here. But, you know, you go down there or Chattanooga or, you know, Charlotte, I mean, any of those places that the NWA went, the bigger places, it was a wrap. And they those guys always drew money, even in the '70s with Steamboat, you know.
And,
so
and the one thing that's I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was gonna say the one thing that about with the only thing that I know I'm jumping forward a little, but I just want to say that, and Double A knows this, and Phil, you may have heard me say it, I don't know, but I was completely against Sting ever stepping foot in WWE, and then I said, okay, I came to the fact where I was like, okay, I'm fine with him going, and the reason why I had an issue because I was same reason he stated, I didn't know how they were going to treat his character, and Sting was my heart. It's like,
right.
He's the last person I want to see them.
Well, you know, I was against it, and Dave wasn't, and me and Dave went back and forth on it.
Yeah. I mean, but what happened was with that was that, like, then I got to the point I was like, okay, he can go and he can have, like, that ambassador type role and he can hang out, you know, and have moments, but I was like, if he wrestles, it's too late for that. And even when I got to the point where it was like, okay, I will be lying to any of y'all if I said that when he came out and everything, I was like, wow, you know, I still can't believe Sting is here. But the thing that really disappointed me after it was all said and done was I felt like the time had passed and was long enough, was gone. Well, they should have built up this guy like he was a big deal back in the day. And they
out of respect.
You're right.
Like absolutely. That's
company. Yeah. That was just, you know, it was the worst company, and Sting just so happened to be like the one good thing that came out of it. And I just felt like it didn't do – that's because if they pumped him up and made him sign, that would have made compelled children want to go back and say, well, who is this guy? But now it's kind of like
– it's mute, especially the way he went out. He went out hurt. But here's the thing, and I guess I went into this when Sting came out at the Survivor Series. I guess it was a year and a half ago at this point. When he came out, yeah, okay, it was the news broke earlier in the day that was a possibility. So we all went into it with the kind of like, but you don't believe it until it actually happens. And even when it happened, it was still it was a sight to take in, because it was something that. You know, it was like the night I saw Eric Bischoff on Raw the first time. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, I can't believe this is going on. And then the first night that Sting wrestled in the WWE was not WrestleMania. You got to remember, like 2 weeks before WrestleMania, he wrestled a match on Raw. And he wrestled against The Big Show. And I remember talking about it, and I said, oh, geez, these two wrestled each other in WCW. This is going back to WCW. But the match just wasn't the same. You know, of course, mm-hmm. Big Show's older, Sting is older. And I kind of just said, you know what, this really doesn't mean anything. I'm not gonna look into this. Going into WrestleMania, though, and I thought, you know what, at the very least, we can get a decent match. And I'm not saying that their match at WrestleMania was bad. It certainly wasn't Triple H's best match, and it wasn't Sting's best match, but that it was a terrible match, you know what, there was some shenanigans and things like that, but you know what, it was bound, something like that was bound to happen. Now, going into the match he had with Seth Rollins, I was expecting to see the old Sting. And for a while there was moments that I thought, okay, this is going to be Sting's defining WWE match. Unfortunately, he got hurt in the match, and that pretty much washed that. And now we're never going to really get a real good match out of Sting in the WWE. But I went into the whole thing with Sting and I thought about this also today. Very, very, like, I was like, I looked at the picture on the screen as I was watching this documentary, and I said, no, Sting wrestled his last match March 26th. 2001, and that's it. That was his last wrestling match. And, yeah. And whatever he did in TNA is fine and well, but I'm not acknowledging. I just can't acknowledge what he did in TNA. I can't.
I wanted to acknowledge his WWE stuff, and my guts couldn't.
Right.
Because they were billing him wrong.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
For me, and this is a guy who I don't think people notice, but you give Jerry Jarrett credit, hot stuff Eddie Gilbert knew, like all these smart guys that were booking at the time knew they had something with him.
Right.
So by the time he got to the Crockett's, now he's got Dusty booking, Kevin Sullivan's booking, mm-hmm. like they had, and And the matches he had between Flair and give Luger a rub, Luger, Michael Hayes, the Great Muta, Mike Rotunda, Rotundo, whoever you're speaking to. Rick Rude, Cactus Jack.
Like, for years, Mick Foley said that was his greatest match he had ever had.
At that point. Right, and you know, I think when he... Now, the WCW stuff, you know me, I lost interest in the NWO 6 months in. So, for me, when he abandoned ship and played the whole Crow gimmick, I was just beside myself. Because I still thought he could have came out with the face paint and with the sexy robe and just started splashing people's faces off. That was just me. I didn't have that connection to the Crow gimmick. You know, up until when he beat Hogan the first time, that was like, for me, that was cool. Mm-hmm. It was a year too late for me personally because I'm impatient, you know me. Mm-hmm. But I think wherever he went, my point is, wherever he was involved in, he was pushed behind the scenes by the big guys in the locker room. So now he gets to WWE after waiting friggin' 10, 15 years. And it's like, now you're expecting him at 50 years old to be the 35-year-old guy he was. And I'm not saying he couldn't do it, but without a proper push, without a proper story,
it's hard.
It felt empty. And we talked about it when you came out in Survivor Series, you know?
That's it, right there. That's the word, right there, right? Buddy.
I was empty. I was like, this is not the Sting. My Sting, you know?
Because one thing that we've talked about a lot, especially recently, since we found out that Sting was going into the Hall of Fame, and me and Lee have repeated this conversation so many times, was that the one thing that Sting had over everybody else in wrestling was that his storylines were continuous. He finished with one person, boom, the next one started immediately. And his storylines were not one-off deals either. His storylines took time. They had build. Almost all of his storylines, with the exception of maybe one or two, he had excellent matches. You talked about the Great Muta. A lot of people forget that Sting had a long feud with the Great Muta in 1989 in Japan. But Sting really put Muta. It's not that Sting put Muta on the map. It's that the Great Muta became a name in the U.S. with his feud with Sting.
Yeah. And he had a couple of matches before that too.
Yeah, and that's what eventually took us into that clash in February of 90.
Yeah.
But
he stayed relevant the entire time, even when he was out on injury.
And there was no boring moments.
Yeah.
He stayed in. I mean, and Phil just read off, you know, a whole laundry list of names that, I mean, it was continuous. Mm-hmm. I mean, just his fuse that he went from people of all different skill levels, shape, sizes, everything. Sting worked with him. You know what I'm saying? The only feud that, and I think that kind of got cut a little short, it seemed, because that was around the time when Hogan was coming in. It seemed like they were changing, in my opinion, WCW to WWF light, was when he had his feud with Jake Roberts. Because Jake came in there, what, 94?
92.
And spin the wheel, make the deal.
That was the whole Ron Simmons thing. Sting was supposed to face Vader that night.
Right.
And Jake Roberts came in, attacked Sting. Sting can't face Vader for the title. They picked Ron Simmons to face Vader, and Simmons becomes the champion that night. That was his debut that night in Baltimore.
And you know
what happened with Jake? Because I thought Jake Sting feud seemed like it was kind of short.
Because of Jake.
I think it was all because of Jake, yeah.
Okay.
But, you know, I see a lot of young kids on social media talk about Sting, and people are like, well, you got to give Sting his props. He stayed there for the whole tenure because he was a company guy. Let's not get it twisted. They paid Sting a boatload of money.
Yes, they did.
And he got probably not enough.
Probably not enough either.
Well, that's the thing, though. He wasn't. He first of all, he's a Christian, and I don't want to get too religious, but like he's a Christian, and the money he made was good. He owned a gym, I think. I don't know if he still does, but he had a couple of business ventures. But the money was coming in. and he picked his schedule.
Right.
Like, you can't – there's not a lot of positions in this world that you can like your job and pick when you want to work.
Exactly. Well, you know what, Phil? I don't think that really became an issue until
later
around 97. Yeah, around that time, because there was also a story, I don't know if y'all remember, where when he was you know, going to talk to his wife about the stuff he had did, you know, why he was on the road and stuff, and mm-hmm. he wanted to come clean to his wife. And I guess some of the stuff he said involved Lex Luger, like him and Luger had, you know, people they were with and stuff like that, women they were with. And I think it affected Luger. I think Luger was with, it had some type of effect on Luger and his relationship with his wife.
Yeah, because I think Luger got a divorce, and I remember something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and then that's around the whole time the thing started happening with Liz and everything. But if I remember correctly, and y'all have to help me with this, because I know Sting was on the last Nitro, but I didn't watch Nitro all the way till the end. Mm-hmm. But even though he was on the last Nitro, he was on the show consistently on WCW. At that point, didn't he kind of like take a backseat too?
The thing is, in 2000, I think when they were starting to do this revamp, I think all the veterans kind of took a backseat. That included Sting. Sting got into one of the few feuds I did not enjoy with Sting was his feud with Vampiro.
Booker T, Vampiro, there was a bunch of guys.
I didn't like it at all. And then Sting got hurt, I believe, in
Slamboree.
No, he got hurt a little bit after that. He got hurt around, I want to say he got hurt around maybe October-ish. He got hurt, he tore, I don't know, he had like shoulder problems, I don't know if he had surgery or anything.
It was end of 2000.
It was at the end of 2000, and he had to be out, and to make a long story short, he wasn't ready to get back in the ring, but by that, you know, Vince had already bought WCW, and at Vince's request, he came in to work the match with Flair.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so he was not physically ready to work, you know, but he did it because, you know, Vince felt that the best way to close out WCW is to close it out with
one.
Yeah. So he and you know, what was funny is that they told the story, Scott Hudson and Tony Schiavone were doing were calling the action that night, and they were telling they were going over, you know, the various matches that they had over the career. And, you know, a lot of people forget they wrestled on Saturday night. They wrestled on other pay-per-views and clashes and things like that. But, of course, they highlighted the key moments. But the one that they said was Sting and Flair opened the first Nitro. They wrestled a match on the first Nitro. And it's only fitting that they wrestle the last match on the last Nitro.
It goes back to politics. It's good business. Yeah. I mean,
and to be honest with you, as shitty as that last Nitro was, it was terrible, absolutely terrible. The only thing that stood out of that was Sting and Flair.
Of course.
Let me ask a question: Was that in the that Sting documentary? Is it called?
Yeah, the match is in there.
I mean, is that Into the Light? Is that the one?
No. That's his one he did with TNA, I think.
No, one is WWE Sting Into the Light.
I guess that's it. Okay, I guess that's it then. Yeah.
I couldn't find it on the I couldn't find anything else on the network.
It's in the Beyond the Ring section.
Oh, Beyond. Okay, I'll find
yeah,
it.
Yeah. It's a good.
It's like what? Like an hour and 15
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, it's like the first part of the DVD.
Yeah. Well, the thing is they showed the documentary. And I think on the DVD in between the documentary they show full matches.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they just show pretty much the whole documentary. But now to go back, you know, to go backwards. We talked about the Great American Bash 1990. He beat Flair, won the world title. In what was... You were not there that night, were you, Lee, or were you? Because I know you've said you've been at certain key events in Baltimore. You were at the one in 91.
91 I went to... what happened? I'm trying to... No, 90 was not.
All right,
90, no.
Let's...
91, I got to look back at all of them I went to.
Yeah.
Because I didn't just go to bashes, I went to...
You went to everything.
House shows, everything.
Yeah. By the way, we are going to take your calls 954-889-7268 double E the rant, all one word on Skype. If you want to comment on anything about Sting's legacy, and here we've got somebody that grew up watching Bruno. Apparently, he's a Sting fan. Surfer.
Of course, I'm a Sting fan. Who wouldn't be a Sting fan?
What's your favorite Sting memory then?
Unfortunately, it was when I thought he had joined the NWO, and it turned out it wasn't the real Sting, it was the fake Sting.
Okay, well.
See, I met Sting in 1991 at the Ramada in East Rutherford, New Jersey, the day before he wrestled at the Meadowlands, the 11th, where he lost. The only time I saw Sting live was when he lost the title after Starrcade.
Look at that. He lost it back to Flair.
The only time I saw Sting live at that point.
It's your fault.
I've only seen Sting wrestle one time live.
Oh, really?
Yes.
All the good stuff happened in your neck of the woods, man.
In Baltimore, yeah. You were lucky. You got everything.
Well, they made it. The thing was, they made it so intimate for us. They made us feel like we were. And ROH was doing that for a while too. But that's a whole different story.
There's a book that's out now. Not to sidetrack off the Sting thing, but there's a book about the arena.
Yeah.
It just came out.
Yeah, that guy did it. I was looking at that, and I was tempted to get it. And I was telling one of my friends, my best friend since I was 10, and he lives in Philly now, but he grew up here in Baltimore. And I said, a lot of people don't realize that it wasn't just a lot of stuff happened down at what we called Old Civic Center. Before it was the Baltimore Arena, and then it turned into, you know, whatever it is now, Rural Farms or whatever it is. But, yeah, it was – I mean, even stuff before I didn't realize until looking back all of the – WWF, I think Billy Graham did some stuff down there.
Billy Graham won the title at the
Everybody
Baltimore
did stuff through there, man. It was like Madison Square Garden light.
Yeah. You know? I got to go back now to, we're talking about the Baltimore Arena. We talked about the Great American Bash 1990, and of course, I played the intro. We gotta bring it full circle and, of course, play the moment when Sting finally did it.
Here comes Flair, going for the figure four. Sting's got it, inside cradle, the DPO, yes! A new heavyweight champion of the world has been crowned. Sting has upset Ric Flair to win the heavyweight championship of the world. The Stinger has done it. The Stinger has done it.
Sting is the winner.
Ladies and gentlemen, the winner.
There's nothing we can say right now. Take a look at this crowd and take a look in the ring.
If you're a wrestling fan, I don't care how old you are, it you don't get excited listening to that or seeing that or show any type of emotion, you really shouldn't be watching this
No,
stuff.
Of course not.
You really should not be watching this stuff. I just literally, like, the hairs on my arms are standing up.
Because even
that's so amazing.
Everything just tied in together. Of course, I Sting winning with a roll up. You know what? That was
the one thing. Double.
That's the one thing that I guess you could say. Well, and you know,
because I wanted him to have make Flair tap so bad. Like that's the you wanted Flair, a submission would have made it seem like Flair finally got what was due to him.
Was he
you know,
Scorpion at that point.
Yeah, he was. He did it from the beginning. Yeah. You know what? One thing, and I don't know what it is that every time, I this could just be me. Every time I see that roll up, I look at Ric Flair's fingers. If you look at Flair's fingers, he's digging into Sting.
You don't miss anything.
And I'm like, well, what is he doing?
4,000 times, you know.
You see those things.
You see those things all the time.
Yeah, but
and the only other thing about that there was a disappointment to me too. I mean, but then when you look at back, what was because after he won, it was like they really didn't know what they wanted to
exactly
to,
because yeah. He went in because the next big match that he had was against Sid at Halloween Havoc, which was
with the fake Sid.
With the fake Sting, Barry Windham.
Oh my god,
it was stupid.
Halloween Havoc, that was a good card too.
And you know, Stan Hansen's going to get inducted tonight as well. And, you know, this all coincides because Stan came into WCW around the same time.
He was on that card.
He was on the card. That's right. He won the U.S. title that night. But I mean, Sting should have fought Hansen.
Well, that would have been a fantastic match. Stiff, strong style versus Sting. Forget about it.
I love Sting. I love Sting. And you know, there's no other wrestler. I mean, but Hansen would have
took his head off.
He would have handed him his ass. But you know what? Hansen would have did a wonderful program with him. Hansen would have built him up at least three matches and had him take that title back from him if there was a title exchange, if there was some kind of title involved in that. Because that's the kind of guy he was.
Because look what he did for Luger. Look what Hansen did.
Not piggybacking off of Sting, but I'm just, you know. That whole car was good, though. Nasty Boys with the Steiners. Yeah. That was fun. I enjoyed that whole car. That car was great.
And then, of course, after Sid was the Black Scorpion thing. And actually, the Black Scorpion stuff was already being... The process of the build was happening already at that point.
Yeah, they had well, it was Ole Anderson and Rick Steiner was the voices, apparently. Allegedly, that's what the rumor is. Wow. And different guys would play him up until it was Flair at Stargate.
Right. And that's just, it was just silly. And then, of course, Sting lost the title at a house show.
Yeah, it was barely 4,000 people. And it was a major snowstorm in the Northeast. And like I said, I had went to the Ramada, one of those places, the day before. It was a convention. And he signed my Pro Wrestling Illustrated. I still have it. The centerfold. When you get the PWI, and you get the centerfold. Yeah, he signed that for me.
Did you just hear the statement you just made?
What's that?
The centerfold.
Losing the belt at a house show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When do you hear that statement today?
That doesn't exist today.
It doesn't exist anymore. So that
well,
was
that's
my
what own... hurt me because I looked on. I'm like, when did he lose?
Yeah.
I was devastated. I'm like, when did he lose?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, they didn't show any video on television.
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
Way ahead of the
championship. That cage match, though. That cage match was dope with Doom versus Anderson and Wyndham.
Yeah.
And they all had street clothes on. It was so dope. It was like a Bunkhouse Stampede match. That was the main event. Sting and Flair weren't even the main event.
Now, we go into 1991, and things start changing for Sting. And there are three things that happened to Sting in 1991. Three. Okay? Well,
he lost the belt.
No, besides losing the belt, there are three separate things that happened to Sting. Well, things that involve Sting that, in my mind, stand out. Okay?
Oh, the Warrior has comments. I'm sorry. I didn't know the Warrior had comments. I was just breezing through. Wow, they got comments from Warrior before he died.
Yeah, before he died, yeah. The first big thing, and, you know, I play it because it you know, if he listens to it enough, it'll make him cry. The first thing happened in May of 1991. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Lee. Lee's getting in his zone right now.
That package and that music?
The package of the Steiners versus Luger and Sting at the first Super Brawl. Oh,
that divided... Two face teams that divide. I remember everybody on our block. It was divided because I was like, I was a Sting fan, so of course naturally Sting and Luger. But I liked the Steiners, and everybody else was like, you know, everybody not the Steiners. And they were like, name all the matches the Steiners. I mean, the moves, the maneuvers the Steiners have. You know, and it was like, couldn't deny that. And I was trying to figure out how they were going to get out of that. And
Nikita Koloff.
Nikita Koloff came out that night, and the infamous. Sting was at the wrong place.
At the wrong time. That's what's going on.
Yeah.
Ah!
And Sting attacked him.
Russian accent.
Was one of the first that I can recall, like, real, like, backstage brawls. Other than the Ricky Morton incident, I don't remember any other incidents that happened backstage in WCW.
But it flowed because it went from
from the Steiners. Right. To that, and then it went on to other things.
Wait, Double A, because at one point, I'll never forget, you did on the rant once and went straight through his feuds and was Sting. Like it was just non-stop his stuff.
Right.
Because he didn't slow down until...
So let's see if everybody's on their toes today. All right. So in May, they were in the program with the Steiners. From there... We went into the Great American Bash. Sting was facing Nikita in the Russian chain match. What happened after that?
He lost that match with Nikita Koloff.
He lost that match.
No, he Rick Rude, right? No. The U.S. title.
Well, no. he became U.S. champion.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And
Who did he beat for? Who was U.S. champion?
That I don't remember who he beat.
Austin. He beat Austin in the tournament.
That I don't remember.
Yeah, he beat Austin. I think it was like Clash of the Champions.
Had to have been a clash because I don't
see August or September of that year.
Okay.
And he held the belt for like.
Well, we're getting into that now, Rick. So you,
I'm Phil.
Phil. Just too many people on the air this weekend. Anyways, Phil. So what happened? It was November 91. What happened the night that he faced Rick Rude? Do you remember, Lee? Think about it.
He faced Rick Rude, and that's when Luger attacked him, right?
That was when Luger attacked him. He came out of the box. And then there was this. This is another one of those famous moments that, to me, it stands out. The infamous Paul Lee promo.
Excuse me, but I'd like to once again reiterate what a horrible tragedy has occurred here tonight. And that tragedy is that Sting has let each and every one of you down.
What a jerk.
You see, the little Stingers mean nothing to that bottle blonde, knuckle-headed United States heavyweight champion. He does not care about the little children who look up to this demigod. He does not care about any of you!
Here he comes.
He cannot appear here before bell time.
Just keep talking, Paulie. Get him in here.
Sting does not appear in this ring by the time the bell rings. There will be a new United States heavyweight champion.
He's back. Hey, Nick. He's back here. There's the bell. Sting trying to get in the building. He's limping noticeably. He went to the wrong door. Sting is back. Now, Paul Lee wants the match right now, but there's got to be a 10 count.
He's administering the 10 count right now.
And Nick Patrick, listen to the crowd here.
He broke the 10 count. He's going to start that 10 count again.
There he is. Will he make it?
Jim, let's talk about what's going on. That left knee, as you can tell, is really hurting. He's not 100% at all.
Because that's when the crazy part was he had the Dangerous Alliance and he had Luger after him.
Yep.
This is where I miss guys like Rick Rude. Because you would love to hear his insight on this. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Him, Savage. You know, Phil, it's... And Phil, you're a little bit older than me. It's dudes that, and you were more in the WWF like Mofo was than I was. But it's some of those dudes, because I was more in the WCW. I mean, I watched it, but nowhere near as faithfully as I did WCW. It's dudes that I didn't appreciate them until it was too late.
I had nothing else at that point. I didn't get WCW like on cable TV till like 90. I mean, I watched it, but like I couldn't
really.
No, yeah, I didn't get cable on my block until 1990. I had to go like different. They did it by
zone. It didn't just come on. Like I was just.
No, I had UHF. I told you the story. I had the UHF channels, and everything would be 6 months behind.
Up north was like one of the last parts of the country to get cable TV, and then.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have, I didn't even really have cable like that.
You lived in a region where they showed everything over there.
You got the local TV. That's
like
what
the local
saying.
TV that had it.
I had. Wow. Okay.
Anything past New Jersey was on point in the 80s when it came to wrestling. Surfer, you didn't get. You got NWA, didn't you? Or no.
Yeah, the only reason I got to watch it because before we got cable, we had those little satellite discs.
Oh.
But the real small, you only got like five channels, and TBS was one of them. So,
yeah, my appreciation for these guys. You're right, Lee. It goes back to whatever, but you know, you don't really appreciate this stuff sometimes till you look back, like, oh, really? Like Flair and Rude and Sting. You're like, yeah, whatever. But when you look at it, and it was a big deal. You know what I'm saying?
Rick Rude. I mean, don't get me wrong. By the time Rick Rude when Rick Rude was in WWF, I saw that. But in my opinion, and it might be people that disagree, I enjoyed his WCW run.
Absolutely, me too.
I mean, compared to anything he did, and I mean, they just really allowed him to shine. And when he came out there, I mean, Rick Rude was just an awesome heel.
I think a lot of that also.
And Sting robbed us of that. Damn it!
No, come on.
Yeah, I'm running in.
That arena, that venue in Japan is what robbed you.
Yeah, but I'm gonna tell you. Hold on, I'm gonna tell you the one blaring difference. Okay, and it's a distracting difference between WWF Rick Rude and WCW was the hair.
I knew you were going to say that.
The mullet or the short
cut. No, the big old afro that he had.
But Rude had a stigma to him in the 80s they typecasted him as a tag team wrestler.
Right.
Who did he team with?
Manny Fernandez.
They were the world tag team champions.
Oh, that's right.
So now when he leaves, he went to Texas.
He went to Texas and was the champion there for a period of time.
Yeah, the national champion. But then when he went to WWE, the mullet is what you speak of. WWE, that's when he gave him the Intercontinental title. That was when the stigma came off of him.
When he came out there, I'll never forget this as long as I live. When he came out there with Jake the Snake Robinson's wife,
with his tights, yeah.
I was done. I was like, I did not believe he did something.
That was probably his biggest thing in
Rick
WWE.
Rude was a monster heel. So you
when he kidnapped.
What's that, Tony?
Oh, my bad, Phil. I was just gonna say when he kidnapped Fifi with the fanny pack on.
Yeah, but that was WCW.
Yeah. But you put
talk show.
You put a guy like Rude with Sting, that program works. It's money. You know what I'm saying?
What about that infamous moment when Harley Race came out and interrupted both of them?
Oh, with Vader, you mean?
Yeah. Sting, Mr. Rude.
I don't remember.
Can I say that, and it just might be me. I don't know how you felt about how none of the rest of y'all felt about it. But when Flair got back, I felt like Flair was just in the way. Because I had Vader, Sting, and Rick Rude, and Flair shows up. And I was like, we got that. I was like, I mean, true, it was Ric Flair, but it was like...
Flair was... He was out of place.
He was out of place. Yeah. And when he beat Vader, I called shenanigans. And I always felt like Flair was jealous of Rick Rude. Like, it just didn't seem like it was big enough for both of them to be.
He just goes back to the politics, man. It goes back to the politics that we mentioned at the top of the hour. I think it was the thing where he goes back... And the room's like, okay, Nature's back.
Because it was a different WCW.
It was different. And, you know.
It was Bill Watts, right?
Yeah, it wasn't Jim Herd. It was the over-the-top rope rule.
It was,
but the thing was,
when
Arn Anderson got back, Arn Anderson always, that's the one thing I give props to Arn Anderson to, because Arn Anderson always managed to find his way, even without Flair. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was with the Dangerous Alliance.
Then he was with the Stud Stable and all that stuff.
He found his way around, even in other promotions. When he was doing the whole thing at one point with
Tully.
Smoky Mountain.
Yeah, he was in Smoky Mountain, you're right.
Yeah.
And doing all that. I mean, Arn Anderson and that was another career cut short. But anyway, the whole thing with...
Yeah, we'll talk about him one day.
Well, the thing was, like, when the thing I liked, too, was that was a time when it was kind of cool that they had two world championships. Because it kind of kept Vader on one side of the company and Rick Rude on the other side of the company.
Rick Rude on the other.
But okay, so now you've got... We're in 91 now. We go into 92, and Sting is going to finish his program with Lex Luger. That was at Super Brawl 2.
That's when he won his first WCW World Championship.
That's when he won his first WCW World title. Of course, a lot of people argue that Super Brawl 2 probably was WCW's greatest pay-per-view. That's
debatable.
That's debatable. It's certainly up there as one of the best ones. But, Sting came out victorious that night. He was the world champion. But then again, Sting, the only thing that's tragic about Sting is that he didn't have that long championship run. Because what happened, the same thing happened during his first run. He gets into another program, but now he got into a program with Vader. And Vader took the title off of him. And of all places, Albany, Georgia.
When did he win Battle Bowl? That was 91 or
91.
That was the first Starrcade.
The king of cable.
That was Starrcade 91.
Yeah, and then he was the king of cable.
Okay.
In 92.
He won the Battle Bowl thing in 91.
Yeah, Battle Bowl in 91, yeah. King of Cable in 92.
So we just going to zoom past that power bomb that Vader gave him.
I know. We're getting there.
Let's go to that now.
So now we're in this program with Vader.
That was at the Omni, actually, that happened.
Yeah.
The power bomb. He broke all the ribs, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And for the next, 2 years, Sting was married to Vader.
Yep. What about
Vader? Because he was wrestling Cactus Jack over in 92 too.
Yeah, he wrestled. I mean, yeah. Vader wrestled other people, but Sting always went back to Vader. You know.
Yeah, he always got back to Vader. That was like his main guy. But that was around the time he was putting two. I mean, he was working with Vader. Because Vader had been already in WCW before, but
for a while, yeah.
He wasn't
a big deal until he wrestled Sting.
Yeah, Sting put him over, and the same thing with Cactus Jack. Cactus Jack was, because I'll never forget, they were wrestling on regular TV. They had a Falls Count Anywhere match.
Cactus Jack homeless after a while, so.
And in 92, he had Jake Roberts, so he did all of that in 92.
Yeah. I know the
Omni. And he went and found Vader in the mountains.
I know the Omni is the Omni in Atlanta is the NWA of lore.
Right.
But I had just gotten cable like a year or two before that, and for me it was Atlanta Hawks basketball. Even though I was a big fan.
Watching Dominique.
Yeah, Dominique Wilkins, Bud Webb. Yeah. So I'm sorry, but every time I see the Omni in print, I think of Dominique and WCW.
Now, and we go into 93... And Sting had a weak year in 93. You know, he kind of was paired with the British Bulldog, and they tried to put the British Bulldog over the entire year, and it didn't work.
They were determined to get him over.
Yeah, British Bulldog The British Bulldog was the Lex Luger of WCW.
He never seemed to fit. Over in WCW.
It's not that he didn't seem to fit. They were force-feeding him.
Yep.
British Bulldog should have always stayed like a tag team.
Not necessarily.
He should have stayed in WWE. Or they gave him a different game. I mean, certain people, when they go to different places, they just don't do
fit.
It.
I don't know
if it's a gimmick or what. But like Luger.
Same damn braids.
Luger's a WCW guy. I mean, I know people had their feelings about Luger Luger was a United States champion. That's it.
Now, we go into 94. Sting gets back into a feud with Rude. Rude gets hurt.
International world champion.
With the international world title. That's where Rude got hurt. He has to wrestle. Who did he wrestle? He wrestled Vader.
Now wait a minute.
The title was held
at Slamboree.
Slamboree.
I know this is going off on a footnote, but since we're doing this, so people can understand, where did that WCW International?
Okay, I'll explain it. So we talked about earlier when the NWA split. At the time, Rick Rude was the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. When WCW and the NWA severed ties, that was the gold belt.
Because the international title when it broke off from the NWA, right?
Ric Flair was the WCW World Champion. Rick Rude was the NWA World Champion. And when WCW told the NWA to take a hike, they needed an excuse to continue using the belt on television because they were just not because they had ownership of the belt. It was the physical belt would belong to them, and so they decided. To come up with this, the Phantom International Tournament, or whatever happened, and they decided to crown. I believe the first one was Rick Rude was the International World Champion, and that's what happened. So they need an explanation on what happened with the NWA World Title.
Now that's the same. This is the same one that Muda held, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yep.
So so that's what happened there. And then I believe also they had when all this transition was going on. This is one of those things that I wish WWE would release because I know they must have footage of it. WCW apparently,
you know what?
WCW taped a whole bunch of television with where Rude wasn't the world champion. I believe Sting or somebody else was the world champion when all that went down with the NWA. They taped all this TV and they decided to go back and just say, you know what? We're going to scrap all this. And all that TV, there was like 2 months worth of TV. They shelved the whole thing. And it never made it to air.
But didn't Sting win that title in Japan from Rude?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, right? He did.
Well,
and then there
I'm
was
confused, though. Because they saying Flair is the first international champion.
It could be. At this point, I don't know which is which.
I thought Rude beat Flair for
right.
it. And then Sting beat Rude for it.
Because the thing is, we went into Starrcade 93. We went into Starrcade 93, and that was Vader and Flair
yes.
for the title.
Yes, okay.
That was for the WCW title.
I have it right here.
Yeah.
So I stand corrected. Flair won it.
Okay, there you go.
Rude beat him, and then Hiroshi Hase beat Rude. Rude won it back. Sting beat Rude. Rude won it again, so Rude had it three times.
Yeah. And then Rude got hurt.
And then Sting vacated. Sting won it again in Philly at Slamboree.
Right.
When he now, wasn't that, when, wasn't that the one when they wanted to hand it to Sting and he
yes.
said no? He
yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And then Flair beat him in South
Carolina.
And then they unified.
They unified it at Clash of Champions.
So what did Muda have then?
Muda had the NWA title.
NWA. Yeah, not international. I stand corrected. Yeah. So
okay, so I'm confused. So Muda had that in 93, though,
92.
Right? 92 and Wyndham beat him.
Yes.
No.
Hold on.
Wyndham beat Muda and then Muda and then
you're right. Lee's right. Wyndham beat Muda for the because Muda beat Masahiro Chono, or was it the other way around?
Didn't Barry Wyndham win it? No, Luger won it in the cage.
Yeah, right? But that was the WCW title.
Right. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Wyndham though was the NWA World Champion in 93.
Yes.
He had a match with Arn Anderson that I remember was a bloodbath at Slamboree for the NWA title, and Arn came like an inch away from becoming the world champion. But Barry, I believe Barry beat Muda, and Muda beat Masahiro Chono.
And then Flair beat Barry, because that's when he beat him.
Right.
He hit him in the figure four, and Barry's arms was down, and he didn't realize he lost the match.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't remember what happened after that. I don't remember who beat Flair after that.
Because WCW made it very confusing. And like I said, they went ahead taping TV one way and they ended up never using it. So, I don't know what they were going through a transition period because this was also during the period where Bill Watts was on the way out and Eric Bischoff was on the way in.
And wasn't that when Hogan was getting ready to come in?
Hogan
too,
was
right?
coming in.
Hogan came in
94.
We still in 93.
No, but in 93, in the middle of 93, Hogan had left the WWF.
Yeah.
And the process of bringing Hogan in was starting at that time.
Who got there first, Honky Tonk Man or Hogan?
Hogan.
Hogan.
Okay.
Hogan had a sick run in Japan, just to sidetrack. Hogan's last match, I think, was WrestleMania 9, right?
No, yeah. King of the Ring.
No.
Ring.
Yeah. So he lost, and then he went to Japan and had a run with Muda and fought New Japan and Old Japan for like a couple of months.
And
then
he talked trash about the WWF title there, too.
Uh-huh. He most certainly did.
He said it was nothing more than a trinket on a Christmas tree.
And then Hogan signed. They had the big parade for him in, I think, June of 94. From Orlando, right, Tony C?
Yep.
They had the Corvette and all that shit.
Yes.
Viper. It was a Viper.
I apologize. It was some kind of clash.
Viper will come into play again in about 4 years' time.
No, it came into play when it came into play when Ric Flair cut that promo on him at that contract signing and left Hogan.
Yes.
No.
Remember that?
Yes, he left him dry.
Wait a minute before
that,
Tony.
I'm talking about the Viper, man.
He said, wait a minute. Yo, wait, because you don't want to talk about that. Hogan was so used to using that same old spiel in WWF about, now what you gonna do, brother, when Hulkamania runs? And people would just shut up and let Hogan have his way. And Flair read him his rights.
And folded him like a newspaper.
He folded him like a piece of paper.
Exactly.
But the best one was that when at the Clash of the Champions, that one where he was screaming like a damn mad.
Where
man.
Flair was going nuts. That was the beginning of the time. Hogan!
Hey!
Who do you think you are, pal?
That was the better one of the two to me because he came out of nowhere with that. Hogan, you know, he was all into his, you know, I just want to have a good match, brother. And whoever wins, best at the beach, da 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 da.
Right.
Hey!
Sting humbly took a back seat and let Hogan
do his
come
thing.
And cripple WCW.
Right. Now,
listen, hold on, Lee, because you got this preconceived note. I know I'm jumping ahead. But you said Sting ain't get a shot at a title again until 97. That's a lot.
No, he didn't say that.
He wasn't in the title.
He took a back seat. He took a back seat.
No. Because before once Hogan left in 95 when he was doing the Phantom thing, Luger and Sting were getting all the title shots with the Giant and Flair. Okay, it was them three.
But no one was beating the Giant.
Yeah.
Nobody was beating the Giant until Hogan got back to beat him.
They were in the picture.
Anyways.
Go back to Sting, please.
To go back to Sting, and now the phone has to ring. Hold on one second, guys.
It all ties into Sting, because Lee feels like from 1994 to whenever, Hulk Hogan just held Sting back from the spotlight. And you can thank Scott Hall, buddy, who's a friend of Hulk Hogan, who came up with that gimmick that got him.
Oh,
quote,
you jumping with your head. I'm not even talking about that. Scott Hall had already left and was doing his Razor Ramon thing. I'm talking about 94. Scott Hall wasn't there yet. He wasn't.
But in 96.
We ain't even there. We ain't even
there. 94. Sting went.
I know. I'm just putting that out there because Lee liked it. I'm from 96 to 94 to whatever. Hulk. Sting was not. He was just a footnote. Nah, 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 nah. No, the hell he was.
No one's going to disagree with me. I mean, it's true. When Hogan got there, and he had once Sting lost that championship, they unified that championship. Sting didn't. He had his fuse and stuff still.
He had a U.S. title.
Yeah, the U.S. title, but
95. Yeah.
Nothing was the same again for him after that.
So let me ask you this question. Do you think the wrong decision was made to have Sting lose the Flair?
No, because
Flair had the heel turn. Flair had the heel turn in 94.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that.
Classic champions?
He turned.
Let's just wait till we get there. I ain't going to jump ahead.
Flair turned.
No,
yeah, Flair turned.
I'm talking about that unification match at the Clash of the Champions.
Flair turned that night.
Yeah, he turned that night.
That's what I'm saying.
But then he wound up, at that point Hogan was already there. Well, the second half of the year, and then they fought the freaking Faces of Fear and all that nonsense. Yeah.
Well, that's what Phil just said. The nonsense. My problem wasn't with the fact that Hogan came in and won. My problem was that the whole company started changing. Look who you had. You had Earthquake, Tugboat,
Zodiac.
Nothing wrong with the Zodiac versus Hulk Hogan.
It had all Hogan's buddies.
And Sting eventually just politely took a back seat to a lot of that.
Actually, he went into the Raptors.
No, wait, we're not there yet.
Yeah,
even there yet.
That's 95.
He had a title. 95. He had the U.S. title.
Yep. Yeah, he had the U.S. title.
Regal slapped this.
No, I'm going to get there. You guys are jumping ahead. Hold on. We're going to go in progression here.
It's just so many highlights.
Yeah, wait a minute. Okay, calm down. You got to calm down. 94, you finish out the year pretty much doing nothing.
You went ahead because I interrupted you with the international championship.
Oh, no. He got the title and lost it to Flair. Okay, then the rest of the year, what did Sting do? Nothing. The rest of 94, he didn't really do anything. Go into 95.
He got in the cage at... Halloween Havoc, right?
He was teaming with Hogan the whole time.
No, he got in the cage. He wasn't even on the pay-per-view. He was just a guest at ringside.
Yep.
he was doing that three faces of fame thing with Hogan. He was teaming with him because Macho Man hadn't even gotten there until Macho Man.
No, Macho got there in December, and then he teamed with Macho Man at Lee's favorite pay-per-view theme, a Super Brawl 5. And
yeah, it is. it ain't just the theme; it's that promo. It's the promo. But no, I still can't find that promo.
I don't understand why WWE
just posted the Rick Rude picture with Joe from Facts of Life.
Oh my god!
At the same hairdo.
It's terrible.
Oh hell no!
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do.
Mr. Del went in on Rick Rude's hairdo.
Pastor, what I like to have right now. What you ever talk about Rick Rude?
Pennsylvania piss ants.
But
Atlantic sweat holes.
Classic.
But then we go into the Great American Bash 95. That's when he won the U.S. title. He beat Ming in the tournament final.
Stiff Ming.
And he held the title until he lost it to Kensuke Sasaki at Starrcade.
Yes.
Yep.
And, or no, wait, maybe Sasaki went into Starrcade as champion and Sting lost it in Japan. I don't remember. I know he lost it to Sasaki.
You know what? I think he did lose. Because what happened was he ended up beating...
He beat Sasaki that night in that WCW versus Japan thing.
That poor belt had two tournaments in 3 years.
Yeah.
That U.S. championship took a dive, man.
You know why? Because it was always vacated. It was always vacant.
Right.
I hate that shit. I love that title. That title was the shit.
And then to close out 95, that's when he got tagged up with Luger again. And that's when... Luger and Sting began this revolving door of feuds.
You skipped the whole thing with Flair, with the Horsemen.
Oh, that, how can I forget that?
Yep.
And look at this. Goddamn, don't people know I'm doing shows today?
Tell your girls to chill out.
Halloween have 95.
Telemarketers. Anyways, here we go. We go into Star... Okay.
Halloween have
95. We rewind now a little bit. Flair and Arn Anderson are feuding. And they have their first one-on-one match against each other at Fall Brawl. Oh, one other thing. I missed this part. Ric Flair is every bit of War Games. Okay? But a lot of people forget, so is Sting. Sting wrestled in a lot of memorable War Games matches. Go back to War Games 91 when it was him, Flying Brian.
Sting Squadron.
But that was 92. Then he went Sting Squadron against the Dangerous Alliance.
Oh, yeah. Anderson, Zabisco, Bobby Eaton.
And Zabisco decked Eaton.
Zabisco.
With the turnbuckle wrench.
Larry Zabisco.
I have all the War Games original from the videotapes.
Yeah. You say that about Sting, but he wasn't in those original War Games.
No, but I'm saying just as Flair is every bit of War Games, so is Sting, because Sting was in a lot of War Games matches, especially those ones in the early 90s. Where, like I said, it was Sting and Barry Windham and all these people against. It was Sting's team, which I think it was Sting, the Steiners, Flying Brian against the Horsemen. And then in 92, it was Sting's squadron against the Dangerous Alliance. And but now to fast forward, Flair and Anderson are feuding. Flair needs a partner to face Pillman and Anderson at Halloween Havoc. I can't find the whole promo, and I wish WWE would post it on the network.
It's on one of the Nitro. It's on, isn't it?
It, but just a segment of the interview. I want the whole thing. It was on an episode of all things. It was on an episode of WCW Pro Wrestling, and Sting just wrestled a match, and Flair comes out with a couple of kids. With a couple of kids in Sting paints, and he gets in the ring with Tony Schiavone, and he starts begging Sting for help. And you know, given the history, Sting feels that he can't trust Flair. So Lee, you tell me, what did Sting tell Flair?
He said, "You turn on me, I'm gonna leave you for dead."
Exactly. Those were his exact words.
Who didn't turn on Sting?
Everybody turned on Sting, but still, it's like that was like Sting was dead serious.
Sting's that, like the gullible hot chick in your crew.
Yeah. So Sting and Flair team up, right? And I believe they teamed up.
Flair came out.
No, wait a minute. I believe they teamed up on a Nitro or something beforehand. So it looked like things were going to be okay. They go into Halloween Havoc, right? And
One things weren't going to be okay. Remember what happened? Happened was they teamed up, and Sting didn't come out right away. Sting came out a little bit after. Flair went out first alone. Sting came out and helped him.
No, that's the other way around, Lee.
No. And then at Halloween Havoc,
that's the other
Flair
way around.
Didn't come out.
Right. Because they said that Flair got attacked.
Like, I came out in them khakis.
Right. And then he came out, and when Sting finally tagged him, Flair got in the ring, did a couple of struts, and went, bam! Knocked the teeth out of Sting's mouth. Mm-hmm. And I just remember Bobby Heenan goes, what the hell? You know, because he couldn't believe it. And it caught everybody off guard.
He told Sting, he said, before when he was begging Sting, he was like, come on, you know Arn's not playing by the rules. And he was like, because Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman were having that way with Ric Flair on a weekly basis. I mean, they was just anything they wanted to do to him, and he stood there and took it. And when he turned on him, and then Sting got beat up, of course, just like Phil said, all gullible. And then Sting said, I'm going to put you in the Scorpion Deathlock. I'm never going to let go.
Yeah, and then he did that.
I told Dave this, too, on a side note. If Brian Pillman had never gotten hurt, he would have been a classic horseman for a very, very long time.
Well, but the thing is, Brian left WCW.
Well, he got hurt.
No, he left. This well, is he before left, he this, left. He left and then got hurt.
Yeah, that bike accident, right?
No, he got into a Hummer accident or something like that. But that was after he left.
Booker Man, Sullivan.
The Booker Man promo. And,
I respect you, Booker Man.
And whether it's true or not, and I don't know if I believe Eric Bischoff. Bischoff claims that he set it up so that Brian could leave, get over in the WWE so that Brian could come back.
What does that say about your company? Why would he even get on that and say something?
I don't know.
That?
That's what he claims.
That seems like he's using WWE only to get Vince, guys over.
Only Vince got over with that with ECW.
Yeah,
Vince and Paulie, they perfected that.
He claims that was supposed to be the case because this was in the beginning times that Eric was beginning to plan the NWO angle, and that he was going to bring Brian in as some big thing, and of course that never happened.
But it wasn't going to work because everybody had known him already as a WCW guy.
Yeah.
The Yellow Dog.
So now we're at the end of 95, going into 96. He's paired with Luger, and it's a revolving door of tag team matches between Flair and Sting against Harlem Heat, which they beat for the titles.
Boss, hold on 1 second. You're missing the gay haircut.
This is when his hair started to change.
Right, so he dyes it with this. He looked like fucking Vanilla Ice with face paint.
He let his natural color come out.
You a fool.
He let the natural.
He did though.
Yeah,
he
had the dark. He had the dark. Bang. He had the dark flat top with highlights.
He looked like a freaking boy band roadie.
It looked a little. It looked suspect.
Nick Lachey hair.
Yeah.
So wait, wasn't that when he had? Oh, so at this point, wasn't it was face Sting and heel Luger.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's when they won the tag team championship. But the Luger hit one of the Harlem Heat with a roller quarter.
Yes.
And Sting, he never saw what was going on.
Nope.
And I couldn't dare tell.
And there's Tony C. Tony C, what's going on over there? He's got a guest. Knows about Sting.
Nope. He surrounded a cow. He's got to go back to the store.
I just sat in the car when they went to the repass and stuff, and I just sat in the car.
Hey, Tony, mute your phone.
And she's tight. She got a match.
Well, she probably talked to Tony.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah, I'm gonna have to hang up on Tony.
Tony's probably.
Hold on. Let me help.
Yeah, I can't get her on my show.
She talking about a funeral surfer. Be quiet. You ain't here to say repass.
No, I'm just saying, like, you know, I've been messing with Tony C to have his wife call into my show.
I don't think I was.
And talk comics, and he's like, I ain't having her come near your show. So.
Oh, boy.
All right.
Well, so.
So then went from Harlem Heat to the Road Warriors, which was.
Terrible.
Now, wait. Double A. Did Hogan, I mean, did Sting and Luger. I'm trying to remember. Did they ever? Was there ever any type of fallout from that whole Luger being heel, Sting being face? Did they ever end up wrestling each other?
No,
No, because Luger.
No, you know what it was, Phil? That's when. Or was that before? When Sting was about to win the world championship and Luger didn't let him get back in the ring and Flair won? Was that not?
I know he didn't show up for Uncensored.
Well, it was. I remember this. I can't remember what year it was. Might have been 95 or might have been. It was Luger and Sting were teamed up against Ric Flair in a triple threat match for the championship. And Sting was about to get back into the ring and Luger held his arm. And then Ric Flair ended up being a world champion. What year was that?
It had to have been 96.
Had to be 96, but I don't.
Wait, Flair had the championship at 96? World championship 96?
He was exchanging it between him and Savage.
That was it then. You know, that was it, because what happened was...
Oh, you know what? Wait a minute. I know exactly. Starrcade 95, that was the main event.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
That was the one when it was like, when everybody was like, Luger and Sting are friends, right.
Because 96 was the NWO at that point. Well,
this is Starrcade 95, the thing that Lee just mentioned, and then Flair went into the program with Savage, and Flair ultimately lost the title to the Giant, which took us into the NWO after that.
Okay, I got it. I'm sorry, I got it. So
it was the gay face paint.
So, yeah.
So Phil, you saying that Luger and Sting never. So I guess Luger just. So Luger must have. I know he was part of the whole faces of. Or no, the what is it? The thing, the End Hulkamania Alliance, the End Hulkamania, whatever.
Faces of Fear.
He was in the Dungeon of Doom.
Dungeon of Doom. So when
that
did
was 95? That was 95.
That was 95. Yeah.
So when did Luger turn face from that?
I don't think he didn't.
He just teamed up with Sting.
Yeah, the storyline just kind of just ended.
He was still a
heel. Yeah.
Well, no, because I'm saying he ended up fighting the Giant. Like, the Giant ended up like...
Well, because Luger was supposed to wrestle at Uncensored with him, and he wound up teaming up with Booker T instead, right?
See, that's the part where I'm confused.
That I don't remember. Like, it's so confusing because...
There was a thing where, like, Sting, they beat Hall and Heath for the titles, right?
Right. And then
in winter of January,
I think it was.
Right, and then Luger kept messing around with cheating and all that nonsense.
And then they feuded with the Road Warriors for a cup of coffee.
Right, Sting was still like oblivious to it, like he was still the dumb hot chick, dumb blonde.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then Luger did not show up for Uncensored in spring. So Booker T teamed up with Sting to prevent the title from changing hands.
I remember that.
Okay. So that, which got him a title, they had a tag title run, but then Sting got a title shot against
the Giant
at Slamboree.
Right.
And then who interfered? Fucking Luger.
But wait a minute, when Luger and Sting actually lost the championships,
they lost it to the Outsiders.
Wasn't that on TV because Outsiders?
They lost it.
I'm saying the Outsiders were interfering, and that's when Hall and Heat rolled them up during the interference.
I think so. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The okay. Now we go into we're in the middle of 96 now, and what I feel is one of WCW's best events, and I've talked about it many times, was the Great American Bash 96.
The night that
Lee almost died. But
real story.
I guess the one thing involving Sting, that slap from Steven Regal.
He pimp slapped.
And they had what was a very good match at the Great American Bash that year. And I believe that's the only time, or at least one of the few times that they wrestled. And that was a good match. And then Sting really, you know, he then was involved in the program with the NWO after that. And, you know, of course he was in the main event of Bash at the Beach. And we get into Hog Wild. It was him and Luger. They fought the Outsiders. There was nothing on the line. Neither one had the tag team titles. We get to the War Games in September. And the fake Sting...
Jeff Farmer.
He's the one that pretends that he's the real Sting and turns on Lex Luger and WCW. Sting comes out, saves the day for 5 minutes, tells WCW to shove it, and walks off, and that's the infamous Stinger after the match where Luger's crawling up the aisle
I have the audio, but I have the speech, I found it on the internet, the Sting's Nitro speech.
I have it here too. This is when Sting said that he has carried the WCW banner.
babysitting.
I want a chance to explain something that happened last Monday night at Nitro. Last Monday night, I was on an airplane flying from L.A. to Atlanta. When I got to Atlanta, I tuned in the TV to Nitro. And I thought I was watching a rerun. It was a very convincing film.
Why won't he look at the camera?
Often imitated, but never duplicated, though. And what else did I see? I saw people, I saw wrestlers, I saw commentators, and I saw best friends doubt the Stinger. That's right. Doubted the Stinger.
It's like a little, so little symbolism
I heard Lex Luger
here.
Say,
we turned our backs on him,
I know
and I guess
where
he's
he
doing
lives,
it to us.
I know where he works out. I'm going to go get it. So I said to myself, I'll just go into seclusion. I'll wait and see what happens on Saturday night. And I tuned in Saturday night, and what did I see? I saw more of the same, more doubt. Which brings me to Fall Brawl. I knew I had to get to Fall Brawl to get face-to-face with the Total Package to let him know that it wasn't me. And what I got out of that was, no, Sting, I don't believe you, Sting! Well, all I gotta say is, I have been mediator, I have been babysitter for Lex Luger. I've given him the benefit of the doubt about 1,000 times in the last 12 months. Yeah.
What's he getting to? I don't like the
tone of this at all. And I've carried the WCW banner. And I have given my blood, my sweat, and my tears for WCW.
I don't like where this is going.
So for all of those fans out there and all those wrestlers and people... Okay, I mean, that never doubted the Stinger. I'll stand by you if you stand by me. But for all of the people, all of the commentators, all of the wrestlers, and all of the best friends who did doubt me, you can stick it. From now on, I consider myself a free agent. But that doesn't mean that you won't see the Stinger. From time to time, I'm going to pop in when you least expect it.
What about tonight?
What did he mean?
What about tonight?
There you go.
Now, was it always meant for him to have a fake Sting, or...
Well... No,
like,
I think
when joined and they changed their mind.
No, I think the story is, and I guess it's confirmed as the case now, as gospel. And by the way, the next time Sting spoke was about 3 weeks later on Nitro. It was like October of that
I
year.
Oh, he spoke after that.
No, he spoke after that. The last time he spoke was about 3 weeks after that. He came out, he attacked the fake Sting. And the NWO was in the ring, and he cut a promo, and he says, "That right there is your cheap imitation.
Oh, okay,
You get what you paid for." And then he goes, "The only thing that's for sure about Sting is nothing's for sure." And that was the last time. He already had the black, the white and black face paint. That was the last time he spoke after that.
But his mouth was still open.
Open.
So it was like symbolic of like he hadn't made his full transformation.
Right. So we get to what was I saying about Sting now? I lost my before Surfer said the thing about Sting. The fake Sting. So the story goes is that Hogan was always the initial choice to be the third member of the NWO, and Hogan apparently waited until the last minute to make the decision. But WCW needed to have, Plan B. And the Plan B was supposed to be Sting. And I think that was the route they were going to go. I think because of Sting, not being the number three guy. I guess they figured they needed to give Sting some sort of big role in this immense storyline. This was it, but to do it, they needed a second Sting. And since Sting's face, it's very rare that you saw Sting without face paint, so really, as long as you found somebody with a similar build, you could pretty much get away with somebody that looks exactly, that almost looks exactly like him. The same way that there was two Undertakers and things like that. So.
And Duke could wrestle, too.
Yeah, Jeff Farmer was a Japan guy. He wrestled in Japan a lot.
Yeah. But yeah, now Sting is the Crow gimmick. And he's black and white, and he's up in the rafters, and
he started dropping the balls.
He started coming down from the ceiling. I still remember the first night he did it was in the United Center in Chicago. I believe it was like March. It was the night that Dennis Rodman came out.
That was June.
No. It was the first time Dennis Rodman had come out. The first time. We're talking all the way back in the beginning of 97. You got to remember, Dennis Rodman was in the NWO's corner at Uncensored that year.
You're not talking about the Voodoo Child.
I think that's the Voodoo Child episode.
So who was the first person Sting dropped after he became the Crow?
The first one he dropped, that I don't remember. No, I take that back.
It was fake Sting.
It was fake Sting, yeah. But he's talking about after that.
Jerry Lynch. Fake Sting was fighting Jerry Lynch.
I remember now.
And he started to come down to the ring.
I remember. Rick Steiner was the first one.
Yeah, because he was doing heels and faces.
Yeah, because and they couldn't figure out if Sting was WCW or NWO.
NWO.
Well, he had the NWO colors on, but he was dropping.
Yeah, but everybody did. Yeah.
Dropping face people too, and that's what I thought they were going to do with Sting. That's what made Sting. That would have made him so great. He just would have been that assassin to take out everyone.
He was great though.
No, I'm just saying, like they didn't stick with that. They eventually floated him back to, oh, he's just a regular
surfer.
Face.
I mean, 18 months.
So you wanted him to be a tweener, like that tweener, like Stone Cold,
or like CM Punk.
But they had to build his whole thing with Hogan. I mean, the only time he ever got owned really was they had to show that Hogan. They didn't want it to make it look like Sting was just walking to win the championship. Mm-hmm. So the only person that got the upper hand on him was Hogan, because Sting sold them Hogan punches.
Mm-hmm.
I never forget when Hogan finally got a hold of him and Hogan was punching him and Sting was flying across the ring like The Rock did.
But no. I didn't like after 6 months, like I told you at the beginning of the show, I got really, but in 97, right, like in the beginning of, it took almost a whole year for them to build up with him and Hogan.
18 months.
And that's the bill, man. But
like the 97 between Savage and Piper and Super Brawl and Uncensored, like all that, I mean, it was like, it was a nice
Luger. He had a few
Luger. 97 was a very interesting year because there were so many different things going on. And
Hogan wasn't wrestling the whole time, was he?
No, he wasn't. He wasn't. But the thing was that everything still revolved around Sting. Sting was the centerpiece of everything because they still were trying to go in that direction that Sting was ultimately going to face Hulk Hogan. I remember it was early in the summer of that year when the whole J.J. Dillon stuff started, where
that was Uncensored with Dennis Rodman. He came down.
But we're talking later in the year, though. I mean, we're talking later that J.J. comes down and says, "We need to find a new opponent for Hulk Hogan."
I got to fight a bunch of
And the thing is that we're trying to. It wasn't that they needed to find a new opponent for Hulk Hogan. They wanted to give Sting what he wanted. And the thing is, they wanted Sting to get back in the ring so that he's able to face the NWO. And I'll never forget, it was not the Clash of Champions, it was on Nitro. And JJ comes to the ring and is like, "Sting, I want you back in the ring. I want you wrestling again. And I believe in my hand, I have what you want."
NCAA. You're not doing it.
Yes, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. Wait a minute. I'm going to do it. Hold on. I think I have in my hand what you want and what's going to get you back in the ring and help us try and battle the NWO. Sting, in my hand, I have a contract for you to sign to face one-on-one Kurt Hennig. And I'm thinking, Kurt Hennig?
Yep.
That was the first one. Then he came down. He came down with like two or three other names in the process.
This one was six.
He got six, and then I think he went to Hall and Nash, and ultimately
he pointed a sign with
he pointed to a sign that said Sting Hogan. Wants Hogan. JJ.
That was at the Clash.
And so that happened. He finally got his match, but I remember there was a night in. I want to say about September, when they were in the early stages of the Sting Hogan build to Starrcade. They had already announced that they were going to fight, and there was an incident in the ring where the NWO was beating the hell out of WCW, and there were multiple Stings in the ring.
I remember that,
and they were all wearing masks. Mm-hmm. And there was one
showing up in the entrance ways.
No. They were all in the ring, and then Buff Bagwell punches this one Sting, and he doesn't move.
But
he no-sold, and Buff Bagwell just turns around and starts doing his pose and things like that, and he got dropped
and
with the Scorpion.
Sting dropped him,
He dropped him, and Sting he took the mask off.
Remember?
Yep.
Yeah.
Look, it's Sting!
It's Sting! And then him coming up from the ring, I remember. There was a couple of times he came up from the ring. There was the night where the dummy fell from the ceiling.
I remember that.
And Hogan was slapping the dummy.
You'd have thought that dummy was really Sting, because he was like, "What are you going to do? Look at you!"
Remember when
got stoned?
Remember when the Crow was just on the ring rope?
Yeah,
that was Clash of the Champions.
That was
Bischoff trying to hit it, or somebody was trying to do something.
They were just swatting at it. They were freaked out about it.
And you know what pissed me off about the whole feud is that Piper match at Halloween made no sense whatsoever.
No, it didn't.
That was just Piper being the glory hole.
That was to sell pay-per-views, man. That was because at that point WWE was getting hot. You had the Montreal Screwjob. You know, Raw was picking up momentum at this point. That was just getting Piper.
That was October. The Screwjob hadn't even happened yet.
That was November, but at the same era, you're talking about they were picking up momentum at this point.
Right.
You
Piper had no reason to be.
The Attitude Era had just started.
To sell pay-per-views, man.
Yeah.
But Lee said it best. He said about Flair, I think he said in 92 when he came back. When Piper came back after the NWO beat him and Flair up, he was just in the dang way.
Yeah.
Right.
Because that feud makes sense.
That stupid cage match, you got to remember, that was at the end of October. Well, what happened at the beginning? What happened at the beginning of October? Had the first Hell in a Cell.
Oh, yeah.
That's why they did that.
Well, I feel like Hogan bought in. He bought in all them dudes who he never could beat in WWF, and he brought them over to beat him.
Yeah. That's all.
That's why the Warrior showed up.
So we get into Hogan and Sting, right? Starrcade, 97. Now, I'm going to take you on a history lesson here. 2 years ago, on this network, we dedicated a night where we did a roundtable on not only the anniversary of Starrcade, but we also did a roundtable after we played...
2 years ago,
back maybe even three. It's been a while. We did a roundtable celebrating Starrcade. We played all of Starrcade 97 because what was one of the biggest things we were talking about when the network first launched? Lee and Tony C could not squash this feud on what really happened at the end of Starrcade 97. So we went into
because Hogan never beat Sting,
right? So we went into this. This night, I believe it was at the end. It was the final. It was like the last show of the year we did on the network at that time. We did the roundtable. We played Starrcade 97 from beginning to end, both video and audio on the feed, and then we came back to have a roundtable on the outcome of the match to see if we could really decide what happened. Of course, I don't remember what happened. You can go download it. It's on iTunes. It's all that stuff. But
no, you said you went back and watched.
I went back. I think I sided with Sting, right?
Sting's shoulders were up.
Sting's shoulders were up. So anyways, Sting wins the title, right? And then this happens. January 8th, 1998, on the premiere edition of WCW Thunder.
Come to... Is it effective immediately?
Mm.
The title is being held up.
What?
Oh.
The championship is vacant until we can come to some decision as to what to do from here.
What a freak out. Look at the face of Sting.
And Sting, I need for you to give me the championship belt.
This is a horrible moment. Look at the face of James J. Dillon and the face of Sting. And actually, the NWO is not even happy either.
This is really a victory for the NWO.
It is. You've got to think that James J. Dillon would rather throw himself in front of a bus than do this. Did you see what Sting did?
You got no what? Guts. He's talking.
You...
You're a dead man. Sting has spoken. Fans will be back.
My man said he's talking.
He's talking.
Yeah, this, and at that point, I had totally lost interest at this point. I mean, I watched it every week, but I was just like,
"Oh my
Phil,
god!"
Phil, I'm with you. I will say this: after the one thing that I wanted to see, and I've said this before, I wanted Scott Hall to beat Sting for the championship.
That was the last. That was like the last match that piqued my interest. During that time.
Long ago.
And he formed like the Wolf Pack. That was just shitty.
Yeah. So I didn't need any of that.
That's the way I felt they did themselves in. I think Scott Hall should have won a championship at he should have won a championship from Sting. I mean, think about what they could have did storyline wise if that happened.
Now,
I'm sorry, Double A, one question real quick. Why was it that the most talented guy in the NWO didn't get a singles title?
Exactly.
Well, he did. He was U.S. champion.
Yeah, it didn't count though, because that belt was terrible at that point.
Was he TV champion?
Yes, he was. He was TV champion.
Yeah, I should say world champion.
He was the one that threw it in the garbage.
Yeah,
was
world champion. He should have been a world champion. I agree.
Yeah,
he should have got over that piss poor Kevin Nash because he was horrible in the ring.
I got to tell you where WCW dropped the ball.
Had nothing to do with him holding him back.
That probably had something to do with it, but
yeah, of course it did.
But still, I got to tell you where WCW dropped the ball. I mean, you guys are talking about okay, he joined the Wolf Pack and things like that, and all that was terrible and whatever. And of course, Sting wrestling the Giant in a singles match for the tag team titles was stupid in its own right.
Remember when
Giant
came out there smoking a cigarette?
Yeah, but the match where WCW dropped the ball. And I mean, they literally dropped the ball, was Sting against Bret Hart.
At Halloween Havoc. Yes, I remember.
Because not only was the match bad, because, and that's, you know, when there's a bad match, it's technically it's the wrestler's fault. But, to be honest with you, I don't remember any build going into it. I don't remember anything about anything of the match other than it was a bad match and Sting left the match hurt.
Didn't Sting wrestle with a shirt on?
Probably.
I think so. Probably. But he got hurt after that.
He got hurt after that. And then that's it. And then they never revisited... What the hell? They never revisited Sting versus Bret again after that.
Crazy. You know?
Well, what about what year are we in now?
We're at the end of 98 now.
99.
So when does Sting turn? What year does Sting turn heel? Am I jumping way too far?
That is. So we go into 99, right? 99 is the only time I saw Sting live. Bash at the Beach, 1999, in a terrible four-way match with Sid, Kevin Nash, and Macho Man for the world title.
Was this before or after Vampiro?
No,
this is before Vampiro.
That was the tag team match,
whatever.
Spring Stampede had the Four Corners match.
Yeah, okay, you're right. You guys are right.
DDP, Flair.
You're right.
Yeah.
Savage was the referee, right?
Yeah, you're right. You guys are right. Vampiro was in 2000, but in 99, that's when Hogan had the match with Sting at Fall Brawl for the title. Luger came. If I'm wrong about this, because it's been a long time since I watched it, Luger came down and gave a bat to Sting, right? Mm-hmm. Gave the bat to Sting. Sting used the bat in the match, and that's where Sting turned and won the world title.
Luger came down, and Hogan was like, look, pointing to Sting, like, look, Luger's the one. And when Sting had the bat in his hand, and he was like, let's get him. And Sting hit him in the gut and hit him over the bat.
Right.
That's when he turned heel.
Right. And then at Halloween Havoc, Hogan laid down. And, you know, that was the first time Hogan had kind of told WCW.
How many times did he do that? Didn't he do that
for Fall Brawl, Double A?
No, that was at Halloween Havoc.
I thought it was at Fall
Brawl.
No.
And then that same night, then Sting wrestles Goldberg for the title, supposedly. The next night on Nitro, and I can't find the damn promo. I wanted to find it for today. Sting came out in street clothes and says, I want my WCW title back. J.J. Dillon came... And I can't find. I looked everywhere for it. I've been looking for it for weeks now.
That was hilarious.
He came out in street clothes and he says, "I want my title back right now, JJ." And JJ's like, "You know what, Sting? You're right. It wasn't a sanctioned WCW championship match, so you technically are still the champion." And Sting is like, "Great. I'm glad you see things my way." They're like, "But you attacked." I believe he attacked Randy Anderson. He goes, "You attacked Randy Anderson last night, and therefore the committee feels that you should be stripped of the world title. We're going to have a tournament to crown a new world champion, blah, 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 blah." And that's that. He says, "Well, JJ, I'm glad you came down here to clear the air, because now I have this to say to you." And then he beat the hell out of JJ.
I'm mad you can't find
JJ it. JJ Dillon.
JoJo.
JoJo Dillon from like 97 to 99
took an ass whooping,
some beat down.
Yeah, he took some beat downs. And then Goldberg came out. Yeah, he won my title back.
He used to be a wrestler.
he was.
He did, but still, Macho Man got him first.
He ain't had no horseman to save him then.
Nope.
It just got bad. It was just
no
bad.
Man.
It was bad.
And then
I couldn't bring myself to watch. I watched in at certain points. I didn't completely give it up at that point, but it just wasn't. You could just see where you could tell. And even when you go back and watch some of the pay per views, you could tell that it was just like no order, and people just showed up out of
nowhere. And then in 2000, I couldn't tell you what happened other than the Vampiro thing, and the Millionaire
and the Millionaires Club.
Luger turned on him.
Luger turned on him.
Elizabeth hit him in the back of the head.
But then they formed the Millionaires Club shortly after that.
Okay.
So
after Vampiro, what did he do?
Yeah, but then Vince Russo got involved. It was so stupid. It was just dumb.
Vince Russo made
himself WCW champion.
Slapnuts got involved. Remember Slapnuts?
Yeah.
Slapnuts was 99.
I don't remember.
Slapnuts was 2000.
It was in 2000 as well.
It was
99 and 2000, Tony C.
I said he started in 99.
We started.
DDP and Kevin Nash were the insiders and still the outsiders. Yep.
And then, honestly, after the Vampiro thing, I don't know what Sting did. I don't remember.
Team Package. I don't know, then
the final Nitro. The final Nitro happened.
New Blood.
Sting was set on fire.
Steiner sent him to the hospital, Double A. Remember that? He cut that promo.
I don't remember any of that. I've said it before. I've said it before that.
You don't remember that?
No, I've said it before that. From 2000 forward, I've blocked a lot of that stuff out because it just was bad. I only remember key moments. Like I couldn't tell you other than Booker T and Scott Steiner wrestling on the last Nitro in the opening match. I couldn't tell you what else happened on that show.
Around about 2000 is when the Scott Steiner, Jeff Jarrett pushes started, and Steiner was sending people to the hospital and telling people about it and retiring people, right?
Yep. But didn't he? Not only did he get set on, not only did Sting get set on fire, they put dogs on him.
Yep. Them Dobermans got Sting, but the funniest part was you see the pain protecting his arm.
Yeah, so we get into the final Nitro, Panama City, March 26th, 2001, and like I said at the top of the show, that essentially was Sting's final match. Because, I mean, everything that he did in TNA, Main Event Mafia, the Joker Sting, granted, I think the Joker Sting...
Magnus.
No, wait a minute. Hold on. Tony C. Hold on. Hold on one second. Hold on, Tony C. The Joker gimmick, I thought, gave him a little bit of a different. It gave him a little bit of a different.
That was all him, you know.
Creative control. Of course. I gave him a little bit of a different take on his character, but I don't acknowledge anything he did in TNA. I really don't.
Wait a minute.
I can't discount all of it.
I have to, because I just to be honest with you, outside of maybe two or three little things that he did in TNA, I couldn't tell you what he did in TNA. I personally don't care, because really, when I see Sting, and this goes back to when he came out at the Survivor Series, and it was a surreal moment seeing Sting walking out into a WWE ring. That Sting, to me, is a WCW guy, and that's where I'm going to keep him. I can't.
But if you say that, that's like
that he had with Magnus. You're not going to do that.
Yes, I am.
Well, you know what?
Not.
Tony, see, that was trash. But you know what? If you say that, you can't count what Flair did in. That's like saying you can't count what Flair did in WWF.
I can. Exactly. I'm going to tell you why I can. I'm going to tell you why I can. Because if what Sting did in TNA was I'm lacking words here. If he really, and it's not Sting's fault, it's the creative of TNA. If what he did in TNA really left a mark, like it left an impact, okay, it'd be hard for me not to acknowledge it. But to me, Sting and in TNA,
it had no impact, it had nothing.
That's what I just said. It's not his fault. That's TNA's fault.
But then you had to say the same thing about AJ Styles, and we know that's not true.
In what sense?
Yeah. I mean,
I'm talking specifically though about Sting. I'm talking specifically about Sting because Sting was not utilized how Sting was utilized in WCW. There was no progression of the storylines. There was no the things that went along with Sting and WCW through the entire run just didn't happen in TNA. In TNA, Sting wrestled. I'm just throwing out a name here.
He won the belt a few times.
He won the belt, but like Sting wrestled, for example, and like I said, I think the match happened, but I'm not sure. Sting wrestled AJ Styles, for example. He would wrestle AJ Styles, but the next month, with no explanation, he was wrestling Mick Foley.
Right.
It's those things I said, you know what, I'd rather...
Sustain a few.
They didn't build him properly.
Didn't build him properly. It just wasn't... It just didn't feel like Sting. And I said, you know what, for my own personal thing, I'm
going
to...
That's the same thing that was going on in WCW towards the end.
Yeah,
and that's Phil and I's argument. And I know you and Tony C watch till the end, but I say that to me, TNA is no different. WCW at the end is no different than TNA. It's the same thing with different initials.
Yeah, because just because it wasn't the same vibe, it was still. I mean, he still accomplished things there. You know, I mean, you can't discredit guys for, especially like actors and actresses. You know how they do like Robert De Niro. Does all these crazy great movies? Then he does Boris and Natasha, and then he does Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, the awful shit movies. But it's still Bobby D. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with Sting. You know, just because he wasn't built or pushed properly in TNA, you can't discredit his contribution there because he put them on the map. He sold DVDs for them. He sold pay per views for them.
I mean, some things don't mean anything. Like, for example, that TNA Hall of Fame to me don't. That TNA Hall of Fame
is
a wash.
Let's be real. That TNA Hall of Fame is the WCW Hall of Fame is on the same level. Nobody remembers it. But yeah.
You're like getting your plaque at Slamboree. Like, okay, that was it. But TNA at one point was a bit of a player. You know, it was the alternative if you weren't into the indies. You know what I'm saying? For the casual fan. So
it's no different than what NXT... At one point, TNA was no different than what NXT is today.
Right. So his contribution to there, he was a big deal over there. you know. So I don't know. He'll never be the guy that I loved from 87 to
That's over with.
87 to 95 is like you're talking like I'm talking like hardcore. That's his legacy.
For me, it stopped at 97. 97, because I will say, being a Sting fan, and Sting even admitted it, everybody admitted it, I mean, Sting did not bring his A game for that.
But by the way, not to cut you off, Lee, but the Hall of Fame red carpet special is on. Renee Young is talking to Ric Flair, who almost started crying about Sting.
Oh, you know, if he's the... Sit down. I'm so tired of Ric Flair and his tears. And you know what this is? This is all his tears of all the stuff he just started. He cries over everything. Everything this dude is crying about. It ain't that much stuff in the world to be crying about.
I'm being old. That's what he's crying about.
He's old now. He's old. When you're old, you cry.
I'm going to head out and go watch that with the family. But for me, his legacy for me is 87 to 95. The crow stuff is cute. It was cute for the younger kids. It was great for the business at a time
where... Are you trying to call me a little kid?
No, I'm just an old bastard. That's
no,
all.
No. You know what? Phil, wait a minute, and I'm gonna preface this with what Phil said. There's a big difference between, you know, the kids that were fans of Hulk Hogan, and then there was the fans that were fans of Sting, and I don't consider that the people that were fans of Sting on anywhere near the same level.
No, because he was the franchise. He was by them.
He was the franchise, and the fans grew along with Sting.
Right.
Unlike the fans that were fans of Hulk Hogan when they were kids, at some point they grew up and they said, "Eh."
Nah, if about you were Hulk a Sting Hogan. Guy, you were a Sting guy. It's the bottom line. I just feel like I lost touch with him as a 20-something. And when the whole NWO thing was about to drop, I was just impatient. I wanted that thing to go 6 months, and that was it. You could have had that whole story done in 6 months. You didn't have to bring Piper in or the Warrior. You didn't have to get Bret Hart involved. That could
have
been.
But you know what else, though? They didn't need. And I know a lot of people on this call, even I know Double A, Tony C probably disagree, but they would have. To me, they would have been just fine with just those three guys.
Yeah. Right. So you know that was his legacy. Tonight culminates all that. You know, and I'm just as happy as Lee is, and as Double A is, as everybody else is. I think he's getting his due, and it's going to open up a lot of casual fans to a guy who never had that run he was supposed to get in WWE. A lot of the fans are getting an education tonight. Yeah. The younger fans, the millennials, you know, are going to get an education tonight on the legacy.
That is Sting.
That is Sting. Absolutely.
As long as Flair don't stay up there for 2 hours talking, I mean,
he's gonna cry and give him his props. But you know what?
I gotta. Now I'm gonna answer this, and we're gonna wrap it up here because I want everybody to go and relax, and I gotta order a pizza and things like that. I probably got an answer. I probably know Surfer's not gonna react, and I probably know there's a good chance that Tony C probably won't react. As for myself, Lee and Phil, when Sting is finally up there, is it possible that you will get emotional?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too.
Yep, because I just always, one thing I wanted WWF to do, I always wanted WWF to acknowledge what Sting did to the business. Like what they're doing, AJ's young enough where he can get in there and do what Sting could have did years ago. But Sting didn't, and all I wanted was that acknowledgement.
I can get emotional depending on what Sting says tonight. I mean, a lot of times guys get up there and say the right thing.
But what I'm trying to say is, like, you get up there, you see him walk out, and, like, I remember when I went to the Hall of Fame 4 years ago and the Horsemen were inducted.
Yeah, I lost my mind.
I was in the audience that night, and before they had started talking, I was already teary-eyed, and of course, you know, I about broke down completely when Arn Anderson got on the mic. But this particular moment tonight probably will get me good, and it, depending on how good it gets me, I may also react during the post show. But long story short is that this is a good night. I'm glad that Sting.
You don't cry, Double A.
That's very possible.
Oh, man.
Very possible.
I cried for Dusty.
I cried for, yeah, I mean, I cried. I can,
for Orndorff.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's.
Cry for Von Kazi?
Yeah. Really? Yeah, before the mustache, dude.
So, we're gonna see what happens. It's going to be very interesting tonight. That's for
Freebirds go in, because I'm going to be one.
I think even for the Freebirds, I think even for the Freebirds, I might.
Yeah. I'm a Freebird mark. Everybody knows it.
You know,
I like, but I ain't gonna cry for him.
I won't cry for him. I'm a Freebird mark. Listen, tonight is a good night for my family because they get a lesson.
Yeah,
you hear stories. Mm-hmm. People get emotional. It's a nice acknowledgement. And I mentioned on the show. I'm not trying to plug my little thing that I did for you guys this weekend, but I said the same thing on the Hall of Fame thing. It's a good night for the casuals.
Yeah, to learn something.
It's a great night for us. It's a good night for the casuals.
Yeah.
Is Garvin going in as a Freebird?
Yeah, Garvin's going in. Yeah.
Absolutely. And rightfully. He was an honorary Freebird for so long.
For so many years, yeah.
And the people are saying he don't deserve to go in need to go kick themselves. That's
bullshit. He was a tag team champion with them.
Yes. Like, for some people, that's the only Freebird they knew.
It's crazy.
I can't believe they would even question that.
Pete, that's an uninformed person that would say that.
But the thing is, that's somebody who would have to have already been a wrestling fan for them to know the older group and to try to discount Ron. I mean, come on now. That's like saying Stan Lane shouldn't go in.
If they put in the Midnight Express. I get it.
And not give Dennis Condrey a rub. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, it's that kind of party. You can't not acknowledge those guys. You can't.
All right, let's wrap this up. Coming up, don't forget, the marathon continues. Coming up next right now, though, on the WWE Network is the WWE Hall of Fame induction ceremony, where you will see Sting take his rightful place in the hallowed halls of the WWE Hall of Fame. One thing, though, that I was going to...
Question.
It just can't, wait a minute. Hold on. I'm here talking, and he wants to ask a question. About Sting getting acknowledgement from WWE now, it's about time, but I see that things are changing in such a direction now that... It's not going to matter anymore where you work. WWE is going to acknowledge you at some point.
Yep.
Part of that is what happened last night when they acknowledged Bobby Roode and the Japanese
did
guy.
They?
Yes, they did.
Kota Ibushi, yeah.
Yeah, Kota Ibushi. They acknowledged him last night. And so, you know, it's
as long as you're under the contract with somebody.
No, but that's the thing. They're not under contract. So it's
saying, as long as you ain't under contract, they won't acknowledge you. If he was still TNA, then they
yeah, of
they
course.
Camera went to win on
That's
him.
True. That's true. But anyways, so coming up later tonight, when the Hall of Fame goes off the air, we will hit the air one more time tonight to talk about what happened at the Hall of Fame for our post show. That is coming up when the Hall of Fame goes off the air. Right now, we're penciled in for 11 o'clock. But in years past, we've gone on the air as late as 12:45 in the morning. So it really depends.
Yep.
It really depends on what time they go off the air. Then tomorrow, what can I say? Tomorrow's a busy day around here. It's the most important day for the network. Of course, we've got all the live show. All the shows will be live tomorrow. We've got starting at 7 a.m. We'll have a replay of the Philatorial, followed by a replay of last night's Freaks and Effing Geeks. And if you missed it, you can hear it tomorrow morning at 8:00 in the morning. The live programming starts at 10 o'clock in the morning with the Wrestling Call-In Show. And from at 10 o'clock until we're off the air before WrestleMania, we will be live on YouTube as well. So keep an eye out. If you want to listen to us on YouTube and interact in the YouTube chat, you're more than welcome to do that. We prefer that you do it on the main website. But if for whatever reason you have to do it on YouTube, we are going to be live on YouTube starting at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning through the entire 8 hours that the four shows are going to be on the air. So 10 o'clock, the Wrestling Call-In Show. 12 noon, Talk Brunch. Turnbuckle Throwbacks will be live at 2 p.m. They'll be talking about WrestleMania 5 for their throwback, and it'll also be the Mega Powers final episode. The Rant rounds it up at 4 p.m. live, and we'll hit the air for the final time of the marathon at 11 p.m. for our two-hour WrestleMania post-show. The entire marathon is currently, of what is aired so far, is currently airing in rotation, and anything and everything will be available to download on iTunes. Any final thoughts before we send it off to the Hall of Fame?
The question I had was, they officially announced Sting was retired.
That's supposedly going to be announced tonight.
Oh, okay. So it's not one of those things where he'll go in and then...
No, they supposedly he TNA. Supposedly he's going to make that announcement tonight.
Tony C, no crying tomorrow, okay?
Listen, I want to thank you guys for working with me today, man. I apologize.
I know you were dealing
funeral,
with stuff.
This funeral ran long. It started at 2:30, man, for some reason. So,
well, that's
I appreciate you guys. Yeah. It wasn't done on purpose.
Yeah, I know.
No. That's more important, though. Family
that's more important,
first.
Yeah.
Do what you got to do.
Anyways, so I guess with that said, I want to thank everybody in the chat room. Stick around, though. Stick around. Chat with us in the network chat room. We're going to try to get more people in the chat room during the Hall of Fame. We can chat and BS and yes, like that. And then, like I said, we'll come back on the air after the Hall of Fame with the post show. For everybody in the chat room, everybody listening live, for Lee, for the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Reyes, Surf for Tony C, I am AA. Thank you for tuning in and hearing us reminisce, remember the man, Steve Borden, Sting, the icon, the franchise, the man that pretty much made us all wrestling fans. And that's why we're here today. We'll see you a little bit later on tonight. Enjoy the Hall of Fame. Have a good night, everybody.
Hey, first.
Later.
And I want to play Sting's music, but now I can't. Here it is.
Sting.
Have a good night, everybody.